Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, it's Alejandro Rojas, and thank you to Bob Dean doing our intro there. If you were at the UFO Congress, he made us all cry when he went up and he accepted the Lifetime Achievement for Wendell Stevens. It was a very, very touching moment because they were good friends, and Bob certainly misses him. And he's always a great speaker who really is very emotional and draws you in. And man, I was getting choked up. I'm not going to lie, people. So thank you, Bob, for doing our intro. Today we have a magnificent show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Our guest tonight will be Suzanne Taylor. She's a filmmaker whose latest project was about crop circles. It was called What on Earth? Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. It was shot in England, and it engages the lively community of artists, scientists, philosophers, geometers, and I'm not quite sure what a geometer is, so I'll have to ask her. Educators and farmers who have been profoundly touched by the crop circle phenomenon. Many people have in the public been profoundly touched because they're profound pieces of art that are found in the mysterious fields out there in England, all over the place, but especially in England. The film goes on to speculate about what would happen if it were ascertained that the crop circles do indeed come from other intelligence, which many of us believe that has happened already, that has been ascertained, but of course not the general public completely in the mainstream arena. You know, they still think it was two old guys get drunk and go out and make crop circles, Doug and Dave, one of whom has already passed away, the other one's something like 80 years old. So I'm sorry to the conventional media out there, it's not those two. Although there are a lot of crop circle groups out there making them, you know, there's still a lot of mysteries to be had. As our listeners know, because we have covered crop circles in the past with the one and the only, the magnificent Nancy Talbot. So this is going to be a lot of fun talking to Suzanne. She's got a great movie, and we're going to be able to talk to her about her perspectives, how she got into this. And she's got a very interesting history in filmmaking that we will talk about as well. So this is going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, if you're a subscriber to the magazine, you are all up to date on the crop circle phenomena because our last issue, the 6th, our anniversary issue, was all about crop circles. And it was a good one, if I do say so myself. So if you haven't gotten that issue, you've got to rush to the website and get it because it's really cool. Also, I guess just a couple notes. Lynn Katai should say thank you to her because this weekend she allowed our cohort in crime. Actually, we don't do anything criminal here. But
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, true, true. Some people, there were some rumors going around that we're black ops of some sort, but not that we're aware of. It's so secret that we don't even know it, if that is true. But
we don't need to know.
Yeah, we're not in the know about knowing. But I do know that the Phoenix Lights anniversary, the 14th anniversary, was this weekend, and Lynn Katai showed her movie, had Travis Walton, and also had the illustrious genius of ufology, that being Antonio Huneas. This man's incredible. And if you get our magazine, again, you know that because he writes a lot of our great articles. But he was able to be there and say hello to the crew as well. So if you haven't seen her documentary, you got to check it out. It's thephoenixlights.net. It's a great one. Also then, Antonio, busy weekend for him, was on the Bob Hieronymus, and I don't have that wrong, radio show. And it's a great show, and I'm sure he had a lot of fun on there, and I hope you had a lot of fun if you listened. But now you're listening to our radio show, which is a lot of fun. And one of the best parts of our show is the UFO news, because we keep up to date on the news that goes on a daily basis. And there's some great news going on. We have just this incredible news reporter guy named Jason who comes on the show to tell us all about it. And actually, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to say he is here with us again this evening. Hello, Jason.
Oh, shucks. Hi, Alejandro. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am fantastic, sir.
Wonderful.
This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, March 14th, 2011. And as you already mentioned, Alejandro, yesterday was the 14th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, the mass UFO sighting that took place back in 1997. And it seems to have become a tradition where Phoenix Light investigator Dr. Lynn Cotai hosts a screening of her documentary, The Phoenix Lights. And she did that yesterday, and I love to report on the Phoenix Lights, anything that happens with the Phoenix Lights, because, of course, us being in Phoenix, it's near and dear to us, and as a witness to the spectacular event, I just find anything new that comes out about it fascinating, worth looking at.
Yes, definitely.
I'm sorry you didn't see it. Neener, neener, neener.
The Phoenix Lights?
Yes.
I know.
No, not the movie. You saw the movie.
Yeah.
I was talking about the actual
event. I know. Yeah, me too. I'm very bummed about that. That would have been great. And I'm anticipating them coming back. In fact, I live near the area where they were supposedly originated. And they certainly flew out over that area, according to eyewitness accounts, just south of the Phoenix area here. So.
And I don't recall the date, but they have made made other appearances.
Well, I want to see them.
You're in the prime spot, my friend. Keep your camera set up. Give me a call. I'll come out.
I got my chihuahua on the roof watching.
All right. Well, I will definitely come out and see it because you are in the prime spot. And this time I will have, well, last time I had a camera in hand, but who knows where that footage disappeared to.
Yeah, you recorded probably something like Fast Times at Ridgemont High over.
More than likely.
The video.
Yeah.
Good job, buddy.
Push record and that tape is long gone. Here's a story just for you, Alejandro. Model and actress Christie Brinkley says she saw a UFO when she lived in Crete. She was out shopping one day, and she saw four lights in the sky. She recounted her story, saying, "This is broad daylight, and the lights are very, very bright. All of a sudden, all four of the lights shot over the mountain to the other side of Crete. When she returned home from shopping, she learned from others in her village that the lights had disappeared into the sea," which is not an uncommon thing to hear in sightings. A lot of sightings happen around water, and a lot of things disappear into the water.
People talk about, and no doubt Christy Brinkley is a very beautiful woman. They talk about how she doesn't show her age, and she hasn't because she looks so great in all of the commercials she still does and everything. But actually, the picture in that story, she actually shows her age.
That is true.
I think that's the very first picture I've seen where it's like, wow, she actually is a normal human being and is aging, and she's not a Pleiadian.
She's aged beautifully, though, and I certainly had an early crush on her.
Oh, yeah.
I always enjoyed watching National Lampoon's Family Vacation.
Oh, yeah. Some great work that she did in there.
Absolutely. But stories like this are cool. We hear more about these, you know, celebrity people coming out with their own stories. And because of that, because they're celebrities, they're in the spotlight, their stories, their witness accounts tend to get more attention.
Yeah. And I personally think that things are opening up. I think more and more people are feeling comfortable sharing their UFO stories because, as you know, the amount of people over the years who have shared their stories accumulating, some very credible people, presidents, you know, media people, and so forth, that they feel more and more comfortable doing that, which is great. And I think that is what's really the slow but continual movement that's going to happen to really make the general public and general feel more comfortable about this subject.
Yeah, I agree. Here's an interesting development from NASA. Images from cameras have apparently provided the most detailed views to date of the far side of Earth's moon. Three cameras aboard NASA's unmanned lunar reconnaissance orbiter provided the more than 15,000 photographs synthesized to create the detailed image of the far side of the moon. Scientists say the surface of the far side of the moon is much rougher than its near side. The 15,000 photographs were taken between November 2009 and February 2011. And this also has an Arizona connection because the cameras are part of, I guess they're basically operated by Arizona State University, who does a lot of these moon missions with NASA.
Yeah, ASU is very exciting. In fact, I was looking up some pictures today, like from the Cassini spacecraft, and ASU does a lot of that sort of astronomical work, which is pretty cool. And don't you have some sort of conspiracy around the moon pictures?
Not really conspiracy, but, you know, with any...
Well, I know a lot of other people do.
Absolutely, and with any sort of space imaging where we don't really get great views, you know, you get partial views. That's why they had to assemble this image of the dark side of the moon, the far side of the moon, from 15,000 different photos over a several-year span, because they can't go there and just take one picture.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an assembly of many pictures. You're not going to get a 100% accurate representation, but it's probably pretty close.
And it would be good because the only picture provided is a very small one, very low resolution. And I'm talking extremely tiny compared to lots of the NASA pictures out there. So hopefully they'll release some better resolution ones because just like Cliff Clifford, who is the director for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, he was in Phoenix recently showing some of the moon pictures where you can see clear manipulation where there are fuzzy areas in these pictures where it appears that something was being hidden.
Outrageous. But I will have to show you. I think there are some higher resolution photos just of small parts, but you can definitely see what they're talking about with the dark side being much rougher. And there are tons of these caves on the moon, these craters and what look like to be the lava tubes or caves that they recently got better pictures of on the front side of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So very cool. I think there's a lot of things under the moon, inside, under the surface.
Like creatures of some sort?
That's my hope.
That'd be cool.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. These underground caves are incredible.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get some inside views of those soon.
Yeah, I mean, the more we discover, of course, like we talked about, the more amazing everything is out there.
Thank you, ASU.
Yes.
My alma mater. Well, I have to talk about another fireball UFO. I love the fireball UFOs. And Oswego, Illinois resident Brandon Tudor photographed a fireball UFO in the sky on the evening of Sunday, March 6th. Which was two Sundays ago. Tudor described the object as a ball of fire falling towards Earth. According to the Beacon News, the witness stated that the object changed direction as it fell. Tudor also claims that he saw two jets fly into view and circle the area after the UFO disappeared. He took four pictures of the UFO on his iPhone before the object vanished. Tudor took to the internet to see if anyone else had seen the UFO. He also made several phone calls. He even looked for answers on Above Top Secret. But he is still on the quest to discover the true identity of the UFO. While other witnesses have yet to come forward, the object was also witnessed by Tudor's daughter, who pointed to the sky and said, "I told you aliens existed." I love that response.
That is really funny.
But you have a fireball UFO falling from the sky, which could be anything. You've got space junk. You've got all sorts of things that fall from the sky all the time. But this one is interesting, being that it changed shape or changed flight path.
Yeah, if that was an illusion of you know, created by him watching this thing and it really did move, of course, that's pretty strange. And I just got done with a story at the Kecksburg crash, which was a famous story from 65 of people seeing a fireball that changed directions, landed in the forest, and then police and army went in there to pick it up. Of course, no meteorite or space debris coming in from the sky is supposed to do that, unless it's some kind of secret damaged space plane.
Right.
Which, who knows? We know they're out there, since it's funny enough that, you know, they keep talking in the news about the secret space plane that the Air Force has flying around.
Oh, yes, with its secret payload.
And they call it top secret, even though we all know about it, and it's in the media and everything, although...
We know about it. We don't know what it's carrying.
Yeah.
Or what its mission is.
Yeah.
But the other interesting thing about this fireball was the report that there were two jets that came and circled the area. Didn't see any photos of that, but that's what the report says. So.
Who knows? You would think that if they are, you know, testing these secret projects, that some would crash or some would have failures or problems, and then they'd want to recover those things without people knowing. So who knows? All this clandestine secrecy, all on the public's dime. We don't know what the heck's going on or why, or if it's having any effect on our lives or national security, and it's costing billions and billions of our tax dollars. Yay, thanks.
Hooray.
Mm-hmm.
I know you haven't seen Battle Los Angeles yet. Are you going to see it soon?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go
Hopefully
with you.
Hopefully tomorrow.
Yeah. Critics have been pretty rough on it, but people who have actually seen it love it.
Oh, yeah.
But at the Los Angeles press day for the film Battle Los Angeles, UFO experts Bill Burns and Mark Easter from MUFON, and retired military officers Colonel Charles Halt and Captain Robert Salas were the panel of experts who answered questions related to UFOs. Did you see the video at all of this press conference?
No, and in fact, actually, I didn't even know there was a video. I don't know. Did we post that?
I don't know if we posted the video. We definitely have an article about it, and I think it has some of the transcript from.
Okay.
It was fascinating, and I think the questions asked were quite serious questions,
mm-hmm.
and everyone on the panel handled themselves extremely well, and it was a very serious event.
Yeah, Battle LA was treating this all very serious, which probably to their benefit, because if people are thinking, wow, what if this is real, then they're going to be more apt to go see it. But even like the movie phone story we did post today about this, they did it. They treated it very well and pretty interesting, you know, talking to military experts, they said, about the possibility of this being reality, although the people they talked to, I know, don't feel that we're in a situation where we're being groomed to be attacked.
Right.
They feel the opposite. But, of course, these military officers, at least one of whom was at our conference, a couple, I think, people were there from our conference, they do believe, of course, an extraterrestrial visitation.
Right. And one of the good questions that was asked to Mark Easter from MUFON at this press day was about movies like Battle Los Angeles. When they come out, these huge blockbuster movies, if MUFON sees an increase in sightings reports after movies like this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. And they thought, well, perhaps it's because people, you know, you can't take them as seriously as others. But what Mark said was a great thing. He said, I think it's a good thing because people are coming after seeing a movie like this. It's on their mind. They start thinking about it and they actually look up, which is what people don't normally do. You go about your daily lives.
Yeah.
You don't think about it. But after people see a movie like this, they haven't thought about the topic before. When they leave the theater, they look up. They start paying attention because they want to see.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know personally, and I haven't seen numbers that show movies drive sightings, but certainly news stories and media news stories do, and you could see that. And I did a talk where I showed that. But I agree with him. It's not necessarily that people are just reporting them and that they're less credible.
Right.
It's that, like you said, more people are looking up and more people start to think, you know, about their sighting because they think, you know what, I saw a UFO 10 years ago and I never told anybody. I should go report it to these guys. You know, not that they're making something up. Some people may see an airplane and say, oh, my gosh, we're being attacked. But I think for a lot of, you know, the people, it's just they feel inspired to report.
I think that's right. And while I don't agree with the idea behind movies like Battle Los Angeles, where they portray the alien invasion, aliens are terrible, look out, we're all going to die, they're evil and out to get us, I think it's positive that we have movies like this because for that very reason, people start thinking about it. They start looking.
Mm-hmm.
They start understanding the reality.
Yeah. It's good to start. It's good to inspire thought and conversation about the subject. That's for sure.
And I think this movie is doing a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And Battle Los Angeles attacked the box office this weekend, claiming the number one spot, bringing in $36 million.
Mm.
However, the there are several, actually, extraterrestrial movies out right now, but the animated one, Mars Needs Moms, bombed at the box office.
Oh, really?
It brought in a lousy $6.8 million, and that movie cost a fortune to make. I don't know what they spent their money on. I know it's animation. But to compare these, Battle Los Angeles cost $70 million to make. Mars Needs Mom, the animated cartoon, $150 million.
Twice as much?
And which makes it even more pitiful that they made $6.8 million.
How weird. Why would it cost so dang much? That's
Joan Cusack. She's a superstar.
Yeah. And it looks like a cute, maybe funny movie. I mean, it looked like it had some good lines and stuff in the trailers, but sometimes the trailers show you all the best parts and the rest of it's awful. So maybe it wasn't that good. Interesting. I'm surprised to hear that.
I guess moms aren't ready to take their kids to a movie about abduction.
Yeah, I guess not, or people abducting moms.
Yeah.
You don't want to offend mom. She's the one who pays for the kids to see the movie.
So. Or don't give the kids ideas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come on, aliens, take my mom.
But, yeah, I'm surprised, first of all, how much they cost to make.
It's ridiculous.
Difference. And then, of course,
I mean, I would think Battle Los Angeles would cost a lot of money because all the explosions and everything. But
yeah, people running around, all the extras, all the people, all the blowing stuff up.
Right.
Although these days you probably don't have to blow up as much stuff because you just
fake it.
CG it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Well, more and more alien-themed movies are portraying extraterrestrials that are a fusion of biological and mechanical.
Hmm.
But some scientists are saying, however, that artificial life is most likely what would come off a spaceship if one landed on Earth. A professor of computer science at UCLA recently said, "If an extraterrestrial spaceship ever lands on Earth, I bet you that it is 99.9999999% likely that what exists, that what exits the ship will be synthetic in nature." Senior SETI astronomer Seth Shostak also stated, "I fully agree that anyone likely to visit will not be biological beings attacking us like in Battle Los Angeles." That's interesting. They're saying robots are going to be what comes to Earth. And some of the points made, or a good point made to back that up, is the fact that our own limitations of space travel and how long it would take to get somewhere, things like that, it's easier to put a robot in the ship, turn it off, and then when it gets there, have it activate.
Yeah, I think those statements are highly, highly speculative. I think
as are a lot of statements that come from people like this.
Especially the scientists, you know, most likely. How would they know? I mean, I agree with them. We most likely, like we are, we send rovers, we send robots into space. But if your technology is so advanced that it's just as easy for you to jump in your spaceship and cruise a million light years, then why wouldn't you just jump in your own ship? I mean, it was just as easy for us to send people to Mars as a robot, we would send people.
Right.
Because they can do more, collect more, everything. If they have a sort of Stargate technology where they can move these vast distances in an instant, they would probably send beings. So it depends. I mean, you don't know for sure.
Well, and if you're like Star Trek and you've got an android like Data, you send him to the planet because you don't have to worry if you'll be able to breed down there or not.
But he never went alone. He always had people with him.
Sometimes they sent him when they didn't know if they would be okay. Send Data.
I don't think that Derek, usually he was with people.
Usually, not always. Trust me on this one.
I will.
And Alejandro, this is a story that we talked about this morning, you and I. A legendary creature is said to be living in Lake Van, or Lake Van, probably.
Van.
In Turkey. Descriptions provided by witnesses are similar to the Loch Ness and other lake monsters. And one woman believes the Lake Van monster could be of extraterrestrial origin. Let's see. Semra Salvan Seslan is a Turkish civil engineer as well as a UFO researcher. She plans to camp out by the lake with the goal of spotting the creature or object, whatever it may be. She's apparently been researching UFOs for quite a while, and she discovered the Sirius UFO Space Science Research Center in Istanbul, which is run by Haktan Oktagon, and apparently she's made a lot of friends over there with several ufologists. And it's funny because she mentioned that she was one of two females involved in the study over there. But it is largely a male field, I think.
Yeah, that's for sure. And one of the girls who used to research over there Man, I cannot remember her name right now for some reason. She came to MUFON a few years ago. Really cool lady. She, I guess, played a small part on Star Trek.
Interesting.
One of the Dabo girls in the Deep Space Nine in the bar.
Yeah.
She was a very pretty woman, and she played one of those bartender girls that he had scantily clad there.
Uh-oh.
But what is it? This girl also is actually very pretty. So they have two women in ufology, and they're both very pretty.
Well, don't bring that up.
Why not? That's too late.
That's why you have so few women in the field, because they have people like you pointing out how pretty they are. They don't want to be known for their beauty. It's for their brains, Alejandro. Their brains.
No, they like both.
She is very pretty.
And the girls, they always talk about who they think are the cute guys in ufology, you know, when they who they want to see up on the stage.
Statements directed at me aside, I've never heard that, Alejandro.
Oh, okay. I have. Once you've been in this field a little longer, once you start doing talks, you'll hear about all the girls. Oh, I can't wait to see you.
I'm jealous, Alejandro. I am. But no,
not that they do that to me.
This creature is pretty fascinating. And a lot of people, more than 1,000 people, I guess, have reported seeing this creature.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And I don't know. The descriptions vary, but it's kind of cool that she thinks it. She described it as an unidentified swimming object or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if she thinks it's a ship or a creature, but she's camping out to find out what it is.
I hope she figures it out and lets us know.
I do too. But Turkey's awesome for their UFO research. You know, mm-hmm. Hakan's a busy guy over there. He's got his UFO museum and his Sirius research center.
Yep, we wrote about him in their incredible Turkish video that they took not too long ago.
Right.
Over a several-year period. And the excellent work that Hakan did in getting serious scientific research done on that video.
Excellent witty comment, my friend.
Thank you.
Alejandro, that is it for the news for today. We will have to continue next week.
No problem, buddy. I look forward to it.
Awesome. Be sure to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed. I relinquish command to you, Alejandro.
You were in command?
I'm always in command.
That's what you saw.
I'm turning off your camera. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Excellent job, as usual. All of the interesting news going on around the world on UFOs. It's incredible stuff. Some of the other stuff that we've written about that you will see at the website should you go there. Some more very exciting stuff, such as more follow-up on the UFO Congress. A lot happened, and some of you were wondering, you know, hey, those films at the film festival, you were talking about that. Which films won? How can I get them? If you were there, there's lots of people who were there who are asking, how do I purchase these magnificent movies? And you can go to our website, and we have a story on that. In fact, we showed some videos which highlighted, you know, the nominees for each category. And includes, which is pretty exciting, the acceptance speeches of the people. So, you know, just to go over some of the winners real quick, best short UFO film was won by Enigma of the Flying Spheres. And this is exciting because this was done by an Italian company, and they did a great job. They actually submitted two entries, and out of the many short films, both of those entries made it to the finals, to the last three nominees, the other one being about the friendship case, and the other nominee was Westall 66, an Australian movie that was about a UFO sighting at a high school out in Melbourne. So very exciting. You can get information on all of these on the website. So we had a very international flair. And then as for the winner for the best UFO feature film, that was a movie by James Carman of Time Travel Productions called The Hidden Hand. So that was a great movie. People really loved it. The other nominees were one called UFOs, The Secret History, which can be found at ufotv.com. And the other was The Day Before Disclosure by Voices of the New Paradigm. And the day before Disclosure won our People's Choice Award. So that was exciting because, again, some international flair. These guys came from Norway to hopefully win an EBE statuette for winning at the film festival. And luckily, they did not go home empty-handed, although one of them was wondering how they were going to explain their little alien statuette to the customs people. The award was accepted by Tara J. and Truls Toftend of the New Paradigm Films. So very exciting, and we have some really cool pictures of the film festival up. We had a guy who took some pictures during the conference who actually does some kind of coffee table books of kind of alternate people with alternative hobbies and stuff like that. Anyways, this wonderful photographer named Peter Best, and we have some really cool pictures of his up there, and you'll see more of his great pictures in our magazine. Also, we talked about the Saudi Arabia Business Forum, where there were some ufologists there that were discussing UFOs in front of all of these major world leaders, including Tony Blair and Bill Clinton. Well, Tony Blair and Bill Clinton were at this conference. They spoke at the conference. I don't think they were at the UFO forum, but it was a packed house. And some of the people speaking at the forum were Jacques Vallée, who we've had on the show recently, Michio Kaku, a theoretical physicist, who we put a video up with him talking about Leslie Kane's book, Nick Pope, who we had at the conference, and we've had on the show not too long ago, and Stanton Friedman, who we also had on the show recently and was also a speaker at the UFO Congress, and then a professor of earth scientists from Saudi Arabia, Zaghloul El-Nagar, and I don't know if I'm saying that right. I probably am, actually. But the cool thing is that this conference posted videos of all of the talks, and there were tons and tons of talks. So this is really great because you can go and see what all of these people had to say and what they told the forum. And this business forum, you know, took this subject very seriously. In fact, the section of the UFO portion of the talk was just kind of about innovation regarding business and how UFOs and opening your mind to the subject. It was called Contact, Learning from Outer Space, how we can learn from to be innovative from opening our minds. So very cool that this conference did that. I think it's very important to see that these major business players, I mean, when you watch these videos, you will see that this was not just some mom and pop deal. This was something that a lot of money was sunk into to put together. And these are some major players. So it's really cool to be able to see these videos. Other stories from the web. We also, of course, I think we talked about this last week, how NASA scientists possibly found some bacteria on another meteorite that he feels he was able to prove from space. So the debate continues. Some NASA scientists have said no, that they don't agree with him. But actually, you may remember that in the 90s this happened as well. President Bill Clinton had a famous quote where he talked about the importance if we have discovered extraterrestrial life. But that was highly debated and kind of debunked by mainstream science, although that meteorite is still under debate. So this whole subject of whether or not some of these meteorites are from space and do show microbial life is under debate. It's not concluded at all. So now these scientists behind the scenes continue to debate whether or not life has been found. Of course, if they can confirm that, I think it would be very interesting. I think people would be extremely surprised, but I think they'd be very excited, and I think it would mean a lot for this field because now people would start to realize that, hey, maybe life is more abundant out there than people have assumed. So those are some of the stories you can check out on the website. However, I want to move to our special guest for the evening. I'm very excited to welcome Suzanne Taylor. Suzanne, are you there?
I'm raring to go.
All right, great.
Talk about my favorite subject.
Yes, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And I was looking at your profile on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, and it appears that you were on a lot of, you know, everybody's favorite television shows back in the day.
That was my first life. That was before I decided that I had to go save the world.
Right. I mean,
so I made a lot of commercials, and I did a lot of sitcoms, and right.
That's pretty neat. It's exciting because these are the best of the best. These are all the shows that I think every kid, most American kids, have grown up with I Dream of Jeannie, Andy Griffith, Dick Van Dyke, and
well, that's if you're old enough, Alejandro.
Well, there's reruns, luckily.
Oh, good.
And my favorite Martian.
Yeah, I was his mother.
That is the Martian's mother?
I was not the Martian. Let's see. It's a long time ago. Was that the show with Bill Bixby?
Bill Bixby. That's right.
I was Bill Bixby's mother.
And I think
it was a flashback because I was young at the time.
So
it was when he was a little kid and I was his mother.
How cool. That is really neat.
Yes, really.
So you have been in the entertainment industry for a long time.
Yes, I was very familiar with the showbiz. When I decided that I could do better for the world than make soap commercials and situation comedies, and actually I was a painter also at the time. I was painting pictures of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the world and I said, wait a minute, I can do better for my world than this. World in trouble needs to be more aware, needs to open its eyes, and how can I keep doing these kind of side ventures here? So I got reorganized myself, and I started pointing at, okay, how am I going to wake this world up? And you had to skip a couple decades now, and here we are, playing with crop circles.
Yeah, very cool. So your first venture into helping to save the planet was crop circles. Is that what crop circles was for you?
No, it wasn't my first venture.
Okay.
I started out by producing a lot of different kinds of programs and events that had to do, it was personal growth at the time that was kind of at the top of the list. It was the human potential movement, Esalen, the 60s actually. I came after the 60s, but that all got started in the 60s of when we, started to think that the world wasn't all Ozzie and Harriet and we should do something about it. And so I was producing a lot of different kinds of programs. You know, L.A. is a crossroads, and all kinds of interesting people pass through. And I was on a list for agents, and people would come through on their book tours. And whenever somebody interesting was in town, or frequently, I would get a call, do you want to produce these people? So I would do evenings for people like that. And then sometimes I would find a teacher who was really sort of at the beginning of their teaching career, and I would say, oh, I think this is wonderful stuff, and I would promote them and help make them successful. And then in the course of doing all that, the crop circles just came along as another subject matter. I was interested in, how we could open our minds, and the crop circles kind of accidentally landed in my lap, and they said, oh, we're not making those, and I thought, oh, that would really open our minds. And so I started paying attention. That was in the late 80s that I, discovered these things. And they hadn't yet possessed me. They were just another interesting thing. And I started producing programs about them. They were very popular programs at the time. I had to rent large spaces because everybody was buzzing in the late 80s and 1990 about what was this going on? What was this that seemed to be visitation going on? And they were so beautiful and so weird. And, under my God, museum quality art in Wheatfields, So, but then as I more and more, became involved and went over to England and learned more and more about what was going on, I thought, oh, this is the thing that could really change the world big time. This isn't one person at a time. This is everyone all at once. And so I more and more dropped the other subject matters and started focusing on this, and then produced my first movie in 2002. It was the first feature film ever about the circles. It was in theaters. It was on the Sci-Fi Channel for 3 years. It was called Crop Circles, Quest for Truth. I was not the filmmaker. I was the executive producer. I put it together, and I actually knew more about the subject than the filmmaker knew. So I would, you know, kind of organize what were we shooting, and I organized 10 weeks in England where we were shooting. But at the end of that, that was a kind of history of the crop circles. And when that film came out in 2002, I thought, you know, there's another film here, which is, what are all these fascinating people who have given up their lives for this phenomenon? They've, you know, left successful careers in many different enterprises, people from all over the world who have become the crop circle researchers. And they're such colorful characters. And the stories they have to tell, I know the stories because I'm now part of this world. And I'm not, you know, the news media that comes along and snoops from the outside and doesn't really know what it's looking at and doesn't know where to go for the most interesting stories. I thought I could make a really fascinating movie. And that's when I embarked on the one I have now, where I am the filmmaker, which is called What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery. I notice on your website you don't tell anybody where they can go to get it, so I'm just going to tell them now. You go to cropcirclemovie.com, and that's where you can see the trailer and actually buy the DVD. But this, you know, was fools rush in where angels fear to tread. I can make a movie. 6 years later.
Wow, so it took a while.
Well, I wasn't doing it, you know, the way when a studio makes a movie, they have a concentrated effort and they do it all at once and they make the movie. But I was continually returning to England and trying to, you know, as a little indie filmmaker, you know, you really have to struggle more to get your movie together. And it did take me 6 years to put it all together. And it came out last year, yeah. So I've got my movie, and I love my movie,
Yay.
And people love my movie, which mm-hmm. is quite wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of people love the movie. It's a lot of fun, and like you said, it's updated, and it's moving on from your first film, which is one that I really liked, Quest for Truth. I like them both, and then this is kind of like part two, you know, moving on and getting into the more personal part of people
right.
and their experiences.
You know, a lot of those people and their experiences came into the field, crop field, because of that first movie. They saw that first movie and
really?
They got, you know, intrigued. And a lot of the people in my movie were the product of seeing that first movie. So that's kind of sweet also.
Oh, that's very cool. That is
very sweet.
Yeah, that's great. Now,
yeah.
When was it that you first when you first experienced visiting a crop circle?
Well, I was producing since 1989,
mm-hmm.
and then I first went over there in 93. I get my decades mixed up. So I've been 20 years, you know, horsing around in those crop fields, and I am probably, of all the people involved, and there is a rabid community of passionate people who gather in England every summer who are
mm-hmm.
the ones who take the pictures, write the books, do the lectures, but of all those people, I'm probably the one with the most energy on getting it out to the world. I don't have a specialty like the others do of being a photographer or a lecturer or whatever, even though I'm now starting to speak. But I have the you know, just this mission to tell the world what's going on. And, you know, how do you tell the world anything? You make a movie, you know. So, you know, that's kind of somewhat my unique role. Everybody, of course, is delivering information, but you know, trying to get it out very broadly so the world really pays attention, I think I've probably got the most energy on that.
Yeah. And, yeah, you're doing a great job. One thing that I love about the website, too, is the videos that you have on the front page, you know, the glimpses into the movie with just some of the beautiful imagery of some of the incredible crop circles.
Well, we have our trailer on cropcirclemovie.com, and what we did was, we didn't take scenes from the movie with dialogue. We took pretty much all visuals and then took the dialogue and put it voice over on those visuals just so that people could really be impressed by how incredibly beautiful this phenomenon is, the crop circles are. People are surprised, you know. By and large, people are not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's all over. They still remember Doug
right.
and Dave from 20 years ago that said they made them all. Oh, yeah, that's over. Those two guys made them all. 20 years later, we still have a really, you know, flourishing phenomenon.
Right.
And people are, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people are quite surprised. So we're bringing them news.
Yeah. One of the reasons I asked you about the first time you visited a crop circle is because a lot of people, their first time walking into a circle and experiencing it physically is very profound, and even people say, you know, they're not able to prepare themselves just for the experience. Was that true for you?
Oh, that is the truth. You know, as much as you see the pictures and you see beautiful photography, being inside one is something else again. You can't believe it. How could this be? You know, it's just so off the wall and beyond the beyond. And it just takes you into an altered state, kind of. The big photographer's site is called Temporary Temples. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it feels like. It feels like you're in something very profound. And because also they land near sacred sites all the time, like Stonehenge. There's lots of that in England. That whole landscape in southern England is full of ancient, sacred, I don't know, maybe that's not the right word, but they have this sense of antiquity, mm-hmm. and that they used to do actually spiritual rituals in this particular area. It was highly ritualized what they were doing here. And so when you're in these formations, you're near some artifact, whatever, you're in this thing that cannot be. It's gorgeous countryside. It's just a beautiful experience. I think probably everybody who goes to visit those circles finds it one of the best things that they've ever done. It's mm-hmm. a wonderful experience.
Now, when you get there and you see, did you do some of the, like, sitting up overnight to watch the fields to see if you can spot something?
Well, I'm not rabid about that. There are those who are.
Yeah.
It gets cold at night, and it gets damp at night. And I did it once, and then sort of at 2 o'clock in the morning, me and the few people, the little group I was with, said, you know, we're cold and we're damp, and we left. But interestingly enough, there's lots of that because it's hilly ground, and what people do is they get on top of the hills so that they can see what's going on below. Of course, it's nighttime, but nonetheless, if there were activity down there, you'd see lights or you'd see, you know, whatever. I mean, you'd probably get a sense that something was going on. But strangely enough, nobody has ever caught anybody in these things making them. I find that actually rather peculiar because there is, there are a lot of them that are hoaxed. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe the hoaxed ones aren't the ones that are under those observation points, but I don't know. There's a lot of mystery about this phenomenon in all different kind of ways, and that's kind of nice, actually. We're so mm-hmm. objective in this world and materialistic and narrow-minded. It's good to have mystery in our lives. But one of the mysteries is, what's going on there? How come nobody's ever gotten caught? And maybe there's less hoaxing than we think there is, because we do think there's a fair amount of it going on now.
Mm-hmm.
The hoaxers are like the terrorists of the crop circle world. They try to fool everybody. They take you... you know, off, you're investigating, you're measuring, you're, you know, analyzing, and all of a sudden, oh, God, this is made by people. What am I wasting my time for?
mm-hmm.
Anyway, it is part of the whole mystery. What's going on there? I don't know. If I do another movie, I'm gonna find out what these hoaxers are up to. Why in the world would they do this year after year, night after night, so to speak? Why are they doing this? They can't get recognition. They'd get arrested if they knew they were making them. You know, what artist does their artwork and doesn't want to be known for it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So I would be very curious to know. And there is, of course, some suspicion. I'm not, you know, I don't want to go doing some kind of conspiracy theory kind of, raise up that kind of energetic, but. But it is very strange, and you do wonder if indeed, and there is a little evidence that we've been put off the track by governments who don't really want us to be aware, to know that we are being visited. They are protecting us from knowing we are being visited. And I don't know, maybe those hoaxers are being paid by them. Doug and Dave were. There was a contract
really?
There. Yes, this seems to be common knowledge now that Doug and Dave were paid a large sum of money. Well, when you look at it, okay, these are the two farmers who in 1991 were, it became known, quote unquote, that they made them all. How did it become known that they, quote, made them all? In a press release that went all over the world. A press release by two little farmers from the middle of nowhere got a press release all over the world. And, of course, we actually do a number on that in the movie where we show you that where the press release seems to have come from, which seems to have been the Ministry of Defense. Because, it was really virtually impossible for that to have happened by their hand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, societies have a way always, whatever, of protecting the status quo. There's too much vested interest in things not changing all that much. And this, if it were really ascertained that these are being made by another species that isn't us, it would change. It would be a radical change for the world. Mm-hmm. We would have to rethink everything if we really knew, not just science fiction, but if we really knew we were not alone here.
Right.
What? There is other intelligence, and it's engaging with us. It's sending us signals. What's going on? The whole world would be asking that question.
Right.
And then, you know, you just extrapolate. You kind of think, well, if we, you know, if it were established, yes, that's what's happening. We're so arrogant. We're the top of the chain. We can kill each other. We can rape the earth. Well, what about if we're not the top of the chain?
Mm-hmm.
What about if there's greater intelligence than us? It would humble us. That would be very good for us.
Right.
It would unite us in one conversation on Earth about what this otherness is. We have nothing to compare ourselves to. We have nothing to be in one conversation about. And that would be tremendously good for us. And, you know, that would just give rise to all kinds of new thinking and new considerations. And we are so imploded in this narrow-minded scientific materialism that it would be wonderful for us to have reason to open our minds, you know?
Right, to finally break out.
You got my soapbox now.
No, that's great. I agree with you 100%, you know, with all of this phenomena that we explore. I agree. Now, what was it that convinced you that there was non-human creators of these crop circles?
Well, you know, the bottom line being convinced, although there's lots of ways, the bottom line of being convinced is the way we establish truth in our society, which is science gives us truth. Well, they've done some very sophisticated scientific work, experiments on circles. And what they've ascertained is that there are changes to the plants, biological changes to the plants, and chemical changes to the soil inside crop circles that cannot be. It is not to be found on Earth. So that's the most telling evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And those things have been written up in scientific papers. They've been published in peer-reviewed science journals. That's where we get our truth from. Why the world is not paying any attention to it is, you know, another thing. I mean, and the whole point, really, of my being out there so ardently is to get attention paid. All that the world has to do is examine the evidence that's already in, be open to looking at it and to taking it seriously. Why not? Science is our God. And everything would change. So, you know, the whole point of my movie, you know, this movie that I've just made is not a scientific movie. It's not, people say, oh, some people say, well, where's all your proof? I said, no, I didn't make this one for proof. In fact, the other one has a lot more proof in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I made this one to get you excited and to see that, you know, there's such passion running on these things so that you pay attention to the evidence. So, you know, that was my real, that was the most convincing thing that just, you know, let me absolutely know that something was going on. But,
right.
You know, there's lots of other ways that you can see the difference between a hoax formation and not hoax, although the hoaxes have gotten better at it over the years, and you can't always definitively tell, particularly when they've been trampled in by tourists, which they do,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of your evidence is smashed, you know. But there are a lot of other ways you can tell. You know, early on, the hoaxers did not do good geometry. And whenever you saw a formation that was exquisite geometry, and they are exquisite, we've learned, we have new geometric theorems in our literature taken from the crop circles. The head of the astronomy department at Boston University got very interested in them in the early years, and that was work that he did.
Wow.
Yeah. So early on you could go, oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. Yeah, that's for real. And then you go, oh, ugly. bad geometry. You know, it might pass muster as a design until you start examining the geometry, and you see that they've just got it all wrong. Nothing fits together. It didn't work that way. Oh, those are hoax, you know. But it was the gorgeousness and the sophistication of the geometry that you couldn't exactly say that was proof. Science is more your proof. But
right,
it's so
right.
impressive. The geometry is so – we go into some of the geometry in a way that you can understand. In fact, some people have said, oh, I finally understand geometry watching your movie. We don't do a lot of it, but we do enough of a snippet so you get the geometric sophistication of these things. And indeed, I mean, they are just spectacularly designed with great, great intelligence. When you ask the geometers over there, and they have very, very bright geometers, when you ask the geometers over there, could you design something as good as the best crop circles? And what they'll tell you is, you know, if there are ideas that the grand circle makers work with, they introduce a kind of a concept, and then they do riffs on it, like fractals got introduced in 1996. And ever since, there have been designs based on the way they interpret fractals in a wheat field. And as the geometers over there will tell you, if once they've introduced a design idea, it's really clever how they interpret it. We could probably design something comparable, but those ideas are so unique and so original, how they're translating a mathematical concept. It isn't just lines and whatever. There's a lot more to it than that. And the geometers say, you know, we are not that. They are so extraordinarily original. The concepts they come up with are just so startling that, no, we'd probably be hard-pressed to do anything equally fantastic.
Yeah, and mentioning the science and everything, it is shocking that even to this day, when news pieces are written, which happen on a yearly basis because there's so many crop circles on a yearly basis, the science is almost always left out of the media reporting, like 90% of the time, which is kind of shocking because there really is some hard science.
Well, indeed, but, you know, your media likes salaciousness and, you know, mm-hmm. controversy and conflict and whatever, and so they immediately glom on to, are they real, aren't they real? Well, wait a minute.
Right.
How about speaking about the implications if they were real?
Mm-hmm.
How about talking about this incredible
right.
effect they could have on us and how stupid it is that we block our minds to it, that we're not interested in it, because if it really did turn out to be the goods, how incredible that would be for other reasons as well. Because if you can picture, they are visiting us, we're not visiting them, whoever they are. They have a capacity to do something we can't do. Well, if they can do that, what else could they do?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not open to it, we're not receptive to it, how can we get their gifts? How can we learn what they understand about science that we don't understand? And what problems could they help us with? Could they help us with global warming? Could they help us with alternative energy? You know, all these things that they seem to be have a brilliance at, or you would presume they would, just from the fact that they can get here. You know, these vast, you look at space and it's impossible. They can't get here, except what if they are? And what else could they do for us? So just the possibility of that should really inspire us to be curious and to open ourselves to this, instead of this kind of nastiness of, oh, yeah, well, people can do that and people can do the other. And, you know, the reporting that they do in the cable channels, most of them, every few years they'll go over and they'll make a new program that they'll rerun for a few years, then they'll go over and make another one. They are incredibly irresponsible. It's so frustrating to see. And a lot of the researchers get interviewed and they think, oh, boy, did I tell them good things? This program's going
right,
to be so
right.
good. And then they see what they cherry-picked out of what was said, and they just pick sentences out and distort the meanings and – I mean, it's really disgusting, actually.
Yeah, it's awful. It's very immoral what they do most of the time.
It's terrible.
Because they give you the idea that, yeah, oh, you told us some great stuff. This is going to be wonderful and eye-opening for people. And then they switch it around so it's
right.
not effective. And
they all do it, you know. Every mm-hmm. single one of those programs
yeah.
has that kind of slant to it, which is why it's good to watch, you know, movies that are not made by the television,
mm-hmm.
you know, cable stations. So, in other words, watch my movies.
Right. I think another reason I think people have a difficult time tackling this phenomenon, especially in particular, is that this one is so enigmatic. You kind of touched on that before and with the geometry.
Right.
There are so many theories and so many theories that really seem to fit, but it's so strange and enigmatic and hard to get a grasp on.
Well, you know, if you're not really paying attention to the evidence, the mind would say, oh, come on, people are just going out and stomping those things down. Come on, don't be ridiculous. But if you are paying attention to the evidence, it's harder to believe that this could be a perpetration by people than that it's not. And what can we say except that's the way it is. That is the truth. Sure, it's hard to believe if you don't know anything. If you look at them, you say, well, yeah, how could – oh, where would they come from? How could they get here? I mean, who knows, you know? How would they do that? Well, I don't know, except that when you look at the evidence, you get to see that it is more unbelievable that it is being made by people than that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's another way that the media misses the boat, it by not being honest and not really being curious. If indeed, as they believe, or they at least tell us, this is all done by people, that's a fabulous story. How did people do this all over the world, 40 countries, years and years, nobody ever caught? How do 4 hours of darkness in England, or closer to the North Pole than I am in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and it gets, you know, light, it stays light later, it gets light earlier. The height of summer is only 4 hours of darkness. How did people do this? I mean, one of the formations, the biggest one ever, is the size of 2 football fields.
Right.
It has 409 separate, it's all made of circles, although they aren't all made of circles, but that one is. How did they make 409 circles in 4 hours that stretch, picture for your audience, the size of 2 football fields?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it would be such an incredible story if what their speculation is or their cynicism is turned out to be true. Yeah, it's all made by people. Oh, my, what a story. If they tell it, if they really investigate, and that's what they discovered, not bring us this phony evidence and, you know, cherry-picked reports and what have you. So as I say, one of the things I keep trying to tell the media is, for goodness sakes, pay real attention, because you'd have an incredible story if this did turn out to be all made by people. But tell, you know, really examine it. And then, of course, I believe what they find out is that it's not made by people.
Right.
So, you know, I got my motives here.
Well, and the History Channel, I know they had a show where they attempted, they had some MIT students attempt to do a circle overnight that demonstrated all of the different anomalies that are found,
and
they failed. They completely failed. I mean, they tried to say that they did it, but they didn't. They did it. It took 2 nights. It was a small circle. They didn't do it in 1 night.
Well, you're absolutely right. They failed, and they claimed they succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Talbot from the science site, and if anybody wants to look up those stories, they're all the science reports. They're all on the same site, bltresearch.com, bacon, lettuce, tomato. research.com,
mm-hmm.
and T is Talbot for Nancy. And Nancy gave them a set of protocols. They said they want to do this TV show. And Nancy said, okay, if you were going to replicate a genuine formation, these are the characteristics you would have to produce. And this is the parameters you would have to abide by. And they did none of that. And, you know, we could go point by point. It would take us the rest of the show. But they ended up with something, you know, but it wasn't fitting the parameters. And they said, oh, look, we did it. And, you know, a lot of people have seen that show, and, you know, I'm the crop circle lady, so they talk to me. Oh, no, we saw those MIT students. They did it. I said, oh, no, they didn't do it.
Yeah, watch the details of the show.
Yeah, really, really.
So let's get into some of these individuals that you worked with and the people who were touched in a profound way, and others I know who have kind of had this compulsion to make this a big part of their life.
Yeah.
Maybe if we could talk about some of these people.
Well, you've got your USC professor of architecture, who actually was invited to be the head design consultant for Charles Eames, if people know who was an incredible designer of product and the Eames chairs, several thousand dollars to buy one. So he's a very talented guy. He was a designer and an architecture professor at USC. And there he is. He's one of the granddads of this phenomenon. He's one of the great experts. And in fact, if anybody wants to read the best book, it's the newest one, and it's his book. He finally, years and years of writing the book, right? When are you going to get the book, Michael? Mm-hmm. It's Michael Glickman. And the book is Crop Circles, The Bones of God. And in fact, if you get on my blog, you can link through to it. My blog is theconversation.org, where I write a lot about the circles, and you'll see a link on there that you can just go buy, Crop Circles, The Bones of God. But it's a very unique book. It's different from all the others, which are histories of the circles or picture books about the circles. This one is Michael in entering the phenomenon and all the discoveries he made, and step by step of what convinced him and what got him, and he's brilliant, you know, and he really does, he is able to analyze them and see what the elements of them are and what the genius of them is, and he'll take you right into that. It's the only book like that, and I highly recommend it. It's very, very readable book, Crop Circles, The Bones of God. So he's, you know, somebody that I would point to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who else would we talk about? There's Nick Collerstrom, who's also in my movie. Not Michael's in my movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Collerstrom was a school math teacher, and he wrote a book. Am I going to remember the name? I have the picture of it in my movie. But what he went on to do, he went on to create an online course based on this book for school students, you know, for students about the geometry, all done from crop circles. And it's actually, you wouldn't just have to be a kid geometry student. If you got on this website, I need to have numbers. I'm sitting in my computer. Maybe I can bring it up here while we're talking. If you got on this website, you'd be fascinated just reading. It isn't just all numbers or lines and circles. It's explanations of various mathematical principles that the various circles are expressing. You would never know this except if you were, you know, somebody expert told you this. So you see a really pretty patterns, but you'd have no way to really be privy to the just loveliness of the elements that go into making this thing. Okay, I'm on his website now. Hypermaths is the name of his book, and it's Hypermaths, H-Y-P-E-R, Maths, plural, .org. That isn't the name of the book, actually, but this is the website. Crop Circles, The Hidden Form, that's the name of the book. But if you wanted to get on the website to see this math course, it's hypermaths.org/cropcircles. And it just charms you and regales you, and I hope it's still up because actually the webmaster is no longer with us. Yes, it's there. I just clicked on it. Hypermaths.org. And you just go, oh, wow, look at those incredibly delicious kind of ideas that are being expressed in these crop circles, names of things you've never heard of, mathematical ideas you've never heard of, and there were, it's all beautifully graphically illustrated on this particular site. And I've been trying, he's had this up for a few years, and I've been trying since that time to get some schools interested in it. Whenever I come across a teacher, I'd send them there and whatever. Most of the crop circle people are not very good commercial salespeople. They don't sell themselves mm-hmm. very well. But I've never been able to get, you know, anybody to take it on. But if kids learned math through these crop circles, oh, they would be learn geometry through them. They would so enjoy the subject. You know, it would be bring it alive in a whole new way that, you know, studying it academically just, you know, doesn't do for you.
Yeah.
And he's just done a beautiful, beautiful. I'm on the site now. Once again, I'm just in love with with all this stuff that he's done. And as I say, you don't have to be interested in learning geometry. You can just see from the illustrations here just how spectacular these geometric ideas are that are being played with.
Yeah, in the geometry, and I just took a look at his site too and some of what he incorporates. There's a lot of geometry, the sacred geometry, which is something that is mirrored and used in architecture that we've seen throughout history. And it's interesting that that really, you don't see that in school, which it would be, I think, an interesting way to teach geometry.
Well, sacred geometry is the geometry of the universe. Everything in the universe is put together along these lines. I guess that's why they call it sacred. Plants grow. If you reduce plants to the mathematical order of how leaves come out and, you know, the whole development of a plant, if you take the human body and you relate the body parts mathematically, the hand to the arm, the you know, all the body parts, they're all sacred geometry. Everything in the universe is sacred geometry, which is why when you turn to the crop circles and they're not all geometric, but the ones that are made along the lines of sacred geometry. That's the element that designs them or the design pattern to them. And that's probably why you think they're so beautiful, why they are so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's very beautiful. The universe is a beautiful, beautiful place. And so even though you don't know that you're looking at sacred geometry, you're just looking at these patterns going, whoa, that is beautiful. It's because they're designed along the lines of sacred geometry. Cathedrals are designed that way. Chart and the Acropolis. I got my names right. Whatever. There, you know, a lot of very beautiful architecture and beautiful design is a function of the sacred geometric principles that they are being designed with, which is the geometry of the universe. Isn't that all beautiful? I mean, it's just so beautiful.
The human body, even.
The human body, even, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's a fascinating study. Yeah.
Yeah, it is incredible. And I think that's another interesting facet of the crop circles is that it incorporates that so much, which, like you said, it's a way to teach people and get people interested in geometry. I think, you know, for me, math and science, I was into it. I was okay at it. I was good at it. But, I mean, until you get the practical uses, once I got to physics where you could do, you know, see the practical uses, oh, this is why I'm learning this stuff. That's when it gets really exciting and when you really want to use it, I think.
Well, I love geometry personally. I was an excellent geometry student. I got 100 on everything. Oh, I got 100 on all my math because there were puzzles you could solve. But geometry was particularly nice because it wasn't just numbers. It was puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And I always found that very fascinating, even, you know, not knowing crop circles when I was a kid. But, you know, that was me. But anybody would love learning their geometry this way.
Now, you talked a lot about, or you earlier were talking about the possible extraterrestrial origins of the crop circles that are not man-made. I know you ran across a lot of different theories. What were some of the other major theories?
Well, people will come up with their opinion,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes very strong opinion. It's nature. Okay. It's the future coming back to us. It's from inside the earth, whatever. And very complex theories. I actually have a little folder for the very strange, very complex. People write whole books about their theories,
right.
Which, I mean, it's quite astonishing the way people take off on this and think they've solved it in some way. But I'll just tell you one reflection I have about all of that. First of all, we have no idea where this is coming from. We've never identified anything in the universe besides ourselves that can function in a way that could deliver these things. It's all science fiction. So we're absolutely speculating when we imagine where they could come from. But even beyond that, I have something else to say, which is that I think we can say relatively definitively, I hate to be definitive about anything, something of this magnitude of awesomeness, but I think we could relatively definitively say that whatever is delivering this, like when people say nature, I say, well, how would nature do that? In fact, it has all the characteristics of being delivered by something that is embodied, like we are embodied, and somewhere, somehow, in another dimension, extraterrestrial, wherever the future, it's embodied because look at what it does. It carefully designs. It makes selections. It makes choices. These aren't just natural patterns. They're being very carefully honed. And then mind is applied to where are they delivered. As I say, they land near sacred sites. In America, they're frequently near Indian burial grounds, ancient things that are, we have a sense of, you know, some kind of sacred, I have to come up with a better word than that, but whatever it is, ancient and to be revered and respected and cherished and maintained and whatever, like Stonehenge and all of those kind of things over there. So they very carefully are placed. They're not only near those things, but if you can picture in England, which is the focal point of the phenomenon, half of the formations approximately each year come in England, and then 40 other countries get a smattering of the rest of them. England is family farms. It's not, commercial farming with these vast farms. They're small farms. And the circles virtually never land overlapping half in one farmer's field and half in another. They're in a canvas. The little farms are like canvases, and the circles land inside them. Well, that's being orchestrated. There was thought given to that. It's not accidental. And what thinks? Well, something in a body thinks. So, you know, there seems to me to be the kind of evidence that indicates wherever they're coming from, we have another species of creature, you know, that actually is embodied. And isn't that a good idea? Fun, kind of a fun idea. Of course, I mean, ETs we've pictured in bodies forever. But, you know, I rather like that some other thinking species that can maneuver and engage us and get here and deliver and design and have thought, you know, what a lot of what they're delivering to us is stuff we recognize, almost like they're saying, look, we see you, and they give us patterns we recognize, they give us sacred symbols we recognize. My movie has a solar system that has the pattern of the planets that will be here in 2012, that date we're looking toward. Somebody, some creature, some mind decided that, you know, oh, look, we'll send them this. They'll. I wonder if the creatures out there are scratching, as I say in the movie, whatever passes for their heads going, why don't they get it? Don't they get it? We keep delivering all this intelligence to them. How come they don't see that, you know, they are receiving messages from us? So,
well, at least they haven't given up on us and they keep trying.
Well, isn't that a good thing? Really, really. And they do keep running rings around us, so to speak. I mean, they just deliver these, you know, every they keep topping themselves with new different kinds of ideas that they keep designing around. And, like, you know, each summer we go, oh, wow, look at that.
Now,
and then, of course, you know, for your listeners, I don't know, I think you have probably a sophisticated audience of
extremely sophisticated people.
But in case anybody doesn't know, the season's about to start. You know, April is the month when a few might come in. March, they've never come in March, but April, sometimes a few, and then May, a few more, and then June, so they really start to be robust. But when they do come in, everybody, if they don't know, get on cropcircleconnector.com, because each one that comes in gets a page, and you'll see the pictures that people take. Everybody knows to send their stuff to cropcircleconnector.com. And then people write their analyses of them, and then they have these terrible chats about them where the hosts try to shoot down the researchers and insult them and say nasty things about them. You don't want to get on those chats too much. But the pictures and the stories that get printed on these pages are quite wonderful. I mean, you see the breadth of the intelligence that's encoded in these things. They're not just pretty pictures, even though they are pretty pictures. There's a lot of information that's being carried in them. And individually information, people sometimes ask, what's the big message? I don't think there's a big message. I think we're just being given over and over again the evidence that intelligence is contacting us.
Right. And that's why people get this idea of messages like you're talking about.
Well, they definitely are telling us things in these individual circles, things we recognize, things we analyze and go, oh, that's a this and that's a that. And, oh, look, that's an echo of something we sent out 25 years ago. Look, they sent it back to us. And, you know, very smart people are paying attention and from all different disciplines. So whereas, you know, you or I wouldn't know about geology or whatever we wouldn't know about, other people do, and they pick out the, you know, the encoded information that's the intelligence of their field, and then they slap it all on CropCircleConnector.com. So you're, oh, wow, look at all that stuff that's in there.
Right. Now, one of the idea series that floats around, and I was wondering if you have a sense of if it's taken very seriously in England, where this mostly happens, is of satellites creating these some sort of top secret military type of thing.
Well, that's an interesting idea that people float around. I actually did a blog post about it because that would not be possible. And there are parameters of how those satellites work, how the Earth is spinning, how the how visibility has to be there in order to do this. And so if you got on theconversation.org, and I wonder what you would have to type into the search, maybe the word satellite, I should get on there myself and see.
I'll try it out.
And see how you would bring up this particular piece that speaks to the fact that that cannot be. So I'm waiting for my blog. Let's see. Okay, let's see if I type in satellite. How do you spell satellite?
Satellite. I'm going to beat you.
Two L's? L-L-I-T.
One L, I think. Nope, that didn't work, but that's okay. Well, military maybe.
Let's see if we get it from that.
But, yeah, I know that's in England, do people really bat that idea around? Do they take it serious, the research?
Oh, here it is.
Can
satellites make crop circles? If you scroll down to the third thing that appears, if you put satellite in the search, you'll get some of the – and that's just a piece of the feedback about why satellites can't make crop circles.
Okay, gotcha. Great, and that's at theconversation.org.
Right. A lot of fascinating stuff on there. There's a archive of, I write about consciousness and spirituality and what have you, but if you go on the right, and first of all, you can go back through page by page, but if you want all the crop circle posts, on the right there, it says previous posts, and the top thing is crop circles, and you see that I've had 130 different pieces I've posted about crop circles here. So if you want them all at once. But I post very interesting other things as well because I'm interested in the crop circles because they can change consciousness. So I put things on the blog that, you know, don't say crop circles at all, but talk about consciousness and how we can what it is and what the bigger picture is that we're missing and how we can aside from having the crop circles jar us into a greater awareness in a way. The greater awareness the crop circles would jar us into is it would change our worldview. Who are we collectively? Mm-hmm. But consciousness is also a matter of individual awakening and awareness and expansion. And I write a lot. I put on a lot of pieces about that as well.
Now you mentioned 2012 earlier, and do you feel some people feel that, you know, that's a mark for a large shift in consciousness or possibly awareness. Do you feel that way?
Here you're in personal opinion. Nobody knows what's going to happen. If you just ask me my personal opinion, what I would say is I don't believe there's any credence at all to the fact that a date is out there and something's going to happen. But what I do think is because we're all interested in that and there is so much interest in it and there is so much, it gets us thinking and it gets us speculating and it gets us talking about what the changes could be, and maybe they're positive changes, and what kind of positive changes do we need? And I think all that focus actually produces something very valuable. So I'm very glad that, you know, we have 2012 there. It's like the harmonic convergence in 86, I think, where, again, I just didn't believe there was anything to the reality of the fact that something was going to happen on a particular date to the universe. But the fact that we were all focused on it and we were all talking about it and, you know, comparing notes and about what we think about life and whatever, I thought all that was tremendously valuable. And in a way, it did produce results. You know, it did get us together into collective thinking. And I can see where this is producing very mindful results in our mindfulness and our thoughtfulness. And I think this is very good.
That's an interesting perspective, because I can see that, how the harmonic convergence did get people speaking.
Yep.
And speculating and new ideas to brew and
yeah,
come
thinking
forth.
Together. Thinking together, which is what we really need to do. We all need to think together and not just think about our own greed or, you know, personal aggrandizement and who gets the most money and whatever. No. We need to think about the, you know, quality of life and what are we all doing here. And, you know, it certainly isn't about whoever makes the most money. I mean, that doesn't turn out to be the goods, even though it's, you know, lovely, but it's not the be-all, end-all, you know. We've really distorted ourselves.
Right, and unfortunately, yeah, especially with how commercial things are these days, and it our country becomes more and more about money. But although I think it gets lost, and maybe you feel this way, I mean, for instance, you have a movie that, like you said, offers a lot of information that is not in the mainstream. And there are a lot of people interested in your movie and in all of these subjects that aren't in the mainstream. And it's kind of like the silent masses that are underneath it all.
Well, I did not make this movie for us. I made this movie to get out to those people mm-hmm. that, you know, are not paying attention to these bigger issues. And, in fact, we're just starting to move out that way. I started out with a marketing campaign to the second largest niche on the net, which is us, when I say us, the UFO niche, sex being the first largest niche. Mm-hmm. But because it was such a vast audience out there, and because I could, first of all, sell the movie and keep retail profit, so then I had money to have a campaign to get the movie out further. And in fact, one thing I want to tell your audience is, if anybody is in New York, big, big deal. My movie's going to run for a week in New York.
Cool.
It's April 22nd. If it does well, it'll run past the first week. And it will go out to a large chain of theaters if it does well. So a lot of my effort now is going into spreading the word in Manhattan. It's going to be a very well-known art house in Manhattan called the Quad Cinema. Everybody in Manhattan knows what the Quad Cinema is.
When does that start?
It starts April 22nd.
April
22nd. And in fact, because you've got a sophisticated UFO kind of audience, I'm looking for panelists to do Q&As with me afterwards.
Oh, great.
So if you get on theconversation.org, my blog, you can email me from there. But I am looking for even people who would moderate. Maybe you don't even know much about the circles, but they have some cachet in the world, and, you know, people would find it interesting to have, you know, bring me some movie stars.
Well, cool, because I know we do have a lot of people in New York, a lot of listeners out there. So, and some of them are active in this stuff. So, you know,
well,
contact
get on,
Suzanne.
Email me, and I'll give you information about things you might be able to go to other than the movie. And there's going to be a big deal thing going on in New York, and I really
awesome.
Want support there. We have 5 shows a day for 7 days minimum. And I want to, you know, have them crowded, and I want it to be successful there. So
all right.
Any New Yorkers, be in touch.
Well, we're out of time, so theconversation.org is where the New Yorkers and other could go to see your blog, and then cropcirclemovie.com to see more about the movie and how to purchase it.
Excellent. Well done. Actually, on the blog, you can click on buy the movie, and it'll take you to the same place at cropcirclemovie.com. So if you all go to theconversation.org, it's the only place you have to go to, and you can do it all.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. You definitely brought a lot of energy to the show and a lot of information.
Well, thank you for being a good interviewer. You are, Alejandro.
Oh.
You really are with me here, and I can really feel it, and that's what helps me you know, express myself. So I appreciate that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for being on the show, and we'll have to revisit.
Well, anytime.
All right. Well, next week I want to let everybody know that we're going to have Chuck Zukowski on. He's a paranormal investigator. We've had him on the show before. He has done Roswell research and also cattle mutilation stuff recently. And he got terminated as a reserve deputy sheriff's officer for some of his cattle mutilation stuff. So we're going to talk to him about that. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio. Don't forget to visit openminds.tv for more UFO news. We'll talk to you next week.